Welcome to The Act of Coaching, the podcast from Ag Leadership. We're a leadership and performance coach training company focused on developing exceptional leadership coaches for modern times. My name is Phil Askew, and each week on this show, I'll be joined by a member of our brilliant alumni, putting a voice to their very own hero's journey story. Our hope is that listening in to real-world stories of everyday people who have chosen coaching as a vocation will serve to demystify things and help you decide if this incredible vocation is something that calls to you too. So with that, let's meet this week's guest. Thank you so much for being on the show. Really happy to have you here, Camille. We know each other because you recently did my course, Land the Clients You Love, as well. So there's a connection there. So it's really, really nice. And I feel like most of the podcast guests that I have on the show, I've not met before. We've only had a to and fro via email. So it's really nice to actually know a bit of your story ahead of time. But we're going to be using this half an hour just to discuss and chat through the kind of people you work with. We'll be looking at what brought you to coaching, why to act in particular, and how the tools impact your personal life and your professional life as well. So let's kick off with a question I always love and one I'm personally passionate about, and that is, who do you feel as if you are in service of? Who are you called to coach? Yeah.
I feel called to coach people who don't fit the conventional image of leadership. So that may be because of who they are physically, or it could be their leadership style, but there's something about how they lead that creates a sort of nagging sense of uncertainty. And I love helping people claim their leadership identity.
Yeah, very important. Very important, especially like for those folks that you were mentioning there, where they don't necessarily feel like maybe they fit the mold or where you were historically speaking.
Yeah.
Could you say more about that? What kind of leaders do you actually work with? So it's interesting you mentioned the predicament they might find themselves in. But yeah, what kind of leaders really inspire you to work with them?
Yeah, so I work most frequently with CEOs and company founders, typically in the biotech, pharma, or technology space. And sometimes they are pure scientists who've never led a company before. And all of a sudden, they're managing a board and they're thinking about taking a company public. And there's so many things they're called on to do that have nothing to do with science.
Yeah.
And they just are riddled with insecurity. And it's not necessarily an imposter syndrome. They have a ton of confidence about who they are scientifically and what they're building. But there's so many skills we expect and behaviors that we expect leaders to demonstrate to sort of, as you said, fit the mold.
Mm-hmm.
And how they operate may not do that. It may be effective,
mm-hmm.
but it's not what people expect. And that tension between expectation and delivery mm-hmm. can create a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah.
The flip side of that is people who demographically have not held these roles before. Women who are in leadership positions, people of color, you name it. They aren't the people we expect to be a CEO, that we expect to be a company founder. And there is a heightened level of scrutiny from investors, from board members who just keep thinking, this wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be. And if you're not behaving or talking or acting in these ways, can you be good? And it's working through all of the noise that comes at them to help them stay grounded in what they do bring to the table and to make them more effective to cope with all of those things and to meet the challenges that they're facing as leaders.
Oh, that's really clear. That's super clear. Wow, that's really clear. That's fantastic. It's oftentimes coaches have a clear understanding of their niche and the way they describe it, but the way you describe that is I can picture them, I can see them, I can feel those struggles that they have, those challenges. What do you get a sense are the impacts on those people? Like, how do they feel if they don't address these predicaments they find themselves in? So if they don't seek out coaching, like for instance, like how are they impacted negatively?
I think that the stress can become unmanageable.
Mm.
Sleepless nights, a real doubting of their ability to just do all their basic tasks, running the company, interfacing with teams, delivering usually the medicine or the science that they're tasked to deliver just becomes almost insurmountable. And so much of being a CEO in this space is fundraising. It's getting these huge investments from venture capital firms or very established pharma companies and saying, yes, we believe in not only the science you're doing, but who you are as a leader. And if they can't convey that with certainty, their runway to deliver the science becomes very short.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that creates an enormous sense of pressure. They're responsible for all of these employees. They're responsible for meeting the needs of patients. Oh my God, can I do this? And it just becomes this, I've had some clients described as a vortex of stress that they just can't seem to get perspective on or the tools to manage.
Wow. Very clear again. It's like going a layer deeper. It's fantastic because ACT, we focus our coach training on leadership and training amazing people to be amazing leadership coaches, but helping support leaders who are doing really important work in the world. You know, so it's really heartening to hear the kinds of people that you're working with and that you're supporting. And I wonder how, because people aren't sort of necessarily born into the role of leadership, are they? It's almost like some fall into the role of leadership, some are pushed, and some are not wanting to be there necessarily. And maybe they've been doers, they've been incredible technicians, programmers, coders, or whatever, scientists, and now they're in a position of leadership, which potentially requires a whole load of different skills. And I'm wondering what it's like, that kind of challenge that they face where they're having to take on board these whole new ways of being.
I think that it feeds into that sense of uncertainty that we've been talking about. So sometimes it means that they are taking on a set of challenges they've never faced before. And there's just that, I'm really good in this space. I've never faced these obstacles before. Do I have what it takes? How do I even begin to think about this? And particularly for people who've been very successful in their zone, facing that kind of uncertainty under a spotlight of leadership is very destabilizing. Or they reinvent themselves a number of times as these companies, you know, startups are tough. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, regardless of industry. So if they've reinvented themselves again and again, they start to wonder, does the track record I've built, is it a net positive or a negative? Is it a liability or an asset? And how do I claim all of what I've done to show up ready and seen as capable for my next opportunity?
Yeah. And the word that kept cropping up for me, or the phrase, is imposter syndrome when you were talking. I was just thinking of how sometimes they're put in a position of leadership. You're expected to know the answers, traditionally speaking. But then there is this whole kind of category of imposter syndrome. Is like, am I able to do this? How am I supposed to do this? And who am I meant to ask for support and clarification? And it feels like what you would do would be to provide a space and a thinking partner where they can explore that, and they can explore the actual leader within as to who they are in that particular role.
Yeah, I think that's true. I'd also say I think there's an additional nuance to the idea of imposter syndrome. I think that's a good catch-all for the totality of the experience. But I think that what these unconventional leaders face is an additional layer of difficulty, because they might feel quite capable, but because they execute it or look differently than what's expected, they're getting feedback that isn't necessarily representative of the quality of their work, but it's based in bias or conventional expectation about what good looks like.
Wow.
And so how do we expand that idea? And so some of it, I think, is imposter syndrome, and some of it, I think, is retraining the people around them to say, oh, leadership can look a lot in different ways and still be effective. And how do we thread the needle on taking in that feedback for them as when I'm working with them as a thought partner, and sometimes saying, actually, I think that might be bias. That may not be real. Mm. How do we distinguish between those things? Mm.
That's really interesting. And I think that varies according to the culture we find ourselves in as well, doesn't it? The country we find ourselves in.
Absolutely.
Historically, it's so fascinating. This is what I love about ACT and the kind of the amount of attention to detail in diversity, equity, and inclusion. They really go there. Like, we really make a point of, And was that, I guess, before we go into the, I really want to jump into more about your niche because I'm so interested in what you're saying, but I really would love to hear a little bit more about kind of your background, really, in terms of like your upbringing. Like, were you always curious about other people and what was going on for them psychologically?
I think I was, for a really specific reason. So I was raised in a really tight-knit family, but it was an interracial family. I was sort of approaching the world with a different lens and claiming an identity as an interracial person, not Black and not white, both, and having to lean into that and defend it a little bit, and also just being very aware of how race was operating in the community that I was growing up in, schools, et cetera. And that sort of sparked a long-term curiosity about how people come together and live or work successfully when they are different. And so I ended up, you know, as all interracial kids do, I got a PhD in history and thought, oh, I'll just crack the code on this. But I wanted to understand, why is this possible for my family and feels so impossible for other families, other companies? And that's what sort of led me maybe to the back door into doing people strategy and coaching and human resources for organizations. And so much of that work is coaching. It's helping people through really difficult conversations, you know, perspectives that are holding them back and need to be reframed, that sort of reactive to creative journey that ACT takes us through. I think it's a great way to think about that. But so much of that is working with leaders to understand these are tools that you can use to do your best work, help your people grow, get more of them, and be truly successful. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I got into this space to begin with, all from
It makes just a lot of sense.
All the days. Yeah.
Isn't it interesting, our kind of formative years and the stories that we make up and sometimes assumptions we make up and how those things shape us and point us and get us curious about certain things. Whether it's trying to fix the difficult relationship our parents have, or whether it's trying to address something culturally where you've just felt that's just not fair. I think our drivers, our motivators, so much of the time come from those early experiences. And it's so fascinating to hear like where people end up, or certainly where they end up mid-journey, and then what they move on to, maybe from a place more of adulthood and awareness and inclusion of what's come before, integration. And then it's right now I know all this, and now I know where that yearning or that seeking has come from. I wonder how I can do something about it now professionally. Like, how can I bring that into the equation?
Yeah, I think so much of who I feel called to serve as a coach not only springs from my academic training and understanding what it takes to create these really functionally inclusive environments, but also just what it's like. I've been a leader in startups and in Fortune 500 companies where I didn't fit the mold because I was a woman, because I was brown, because I didn't take the traditional HR path. You know, who in HR comes to it with a history PhD? Nobody. Like, I had not checked the neural boxes. And people thought, well, if you haven't done compensation for 20 years, how could you possibly be our head of HR? And so there's all these ways that I learned what it's like to lead when you don't fit the conventional mold and how to navigate through that. And my own coach during those times was instrumental.
You must have had to be really resilient, I would imagine. Like, when you're describing that, it takes a lot of courage and a lot of bravery to persist when you get a sense that people around you may be doubting, or they're not necessarily trusting that you can do the job, or it's not what they expect. What kept you going? What gave you that resilience?
I was committed to the mission. It got really hard. Sometimes it was just a very lonely place to be. But I think that the coaching aspect of my work kept me passionate, because I was able to have these one-on-one impacts with the employees around me or the leaders that I was coaching And I thought, even when it's really difficult for me, I feel like there's a reason I'm here. Yeah. I can see myself making a difference. And I've looked for different ways to express that I think really focus my professional skills onto that more exclusively.
Yeah.
But, and thus my move specifically to coaching. But yeah, I think that really helped me get through it.
No, that's powerful, isn't it? And I think if we have personal experience of it, it definitely plays a part. It's like, yeah, I remember what that felt like. And I'm not willing to stand back and let that perpetuate. I feel as if I can do something about this. I've got the skills and I've got the tools and the desire to make a difference here. And I'm going to step up and do that. That's leadership, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And I think it really matters to my clients that while it's really fundamental to have programs like ACT, where you're getting these deep training around the models to use, My clients also want to know that I've walked in their shoes a bit.
Yeah.
I know what it's like to stand in front of the board and they're looking at you sideways and you've got to figure it out.
Yeah. And stay without crumbling, without tap into resource and to get centered and grounded. Yeah. Well, you mentioned ACT there, and of course, this is an ACT podcast. And the reason I kicked it off was because I really wanted to hear the stories of the people behind the training, because I know we have an incredible program, but I suppose this is leading me up to thinking like, so what had you choose ACT's LPCC certification program above others? What had you choose that?
Yeah, I think for me, it was that there was such a sense that we were going to go deep, both on very tested practical models, but also that we weren't going to be sitting on our hands being fed things. Here's the thing. No, go do it. And you're like, well, no, you just told me I'm not ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, being thrown at what felt like the deep end of the pond, but always we were ready. And we come out of those breakout sessions and come back and think, oh my gosh, I just did that. And it was both educational and empowering.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really experiential, isn't it? I think that's one of the fantastic things about it. And even though we do a virtual and a hybrid and face-to-face at Brown, you know, there is a sense that everything is experiential. Here's a tool. Here's an incredible thing. We're going to show you it, demo it, and we're going to give you an experience of it yourselves, and you're going to be coaching each other and then put you into breakout rooms or into triads and what have you, bring you back and then talk about it, debrief it. I think that makes a big difference.
It does. And I think that at the end of it, I bonded with the members of my cohort so much so that classes have been over for quite some time and we still reach out and ask questions and jump on Zoom and say, how are you dealing with this? What's this like?
Yeah.
It's just tremendous.
Because I think you go really deep together, don't you? Like the cohorts of people, I think, is up to 24 members, no more than that. There's such an intimacy that builds over that period of 8 months. It's just unbelievable, isn't it? Like the connections that you get.
Yeah. It's as impactful, I think, as the training.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And I love that it's not death by PowerPoint, as they say.
No, I signed up thinking, okay, you can stay awake for 3 full days of Zoom meetings.
Yeah.
And in the first hour, I thought, oh my gosh,
yeah,
this is so fantastic. I never thought a virtual learning experience would be that engaging.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a lot of skill to be able to facilitate training over Zoom, looking at a screen for a period of time, but to actually get that experiential felt sense of coaching with someone else or what it's like to be a coachee receiving coaching. And I think it goes to prove the point. So us as coaches, you know, like I've been a coach for 16 years and we were around in the early days of Skype when it looked like Lego. It was really blocky and horrific.
Yeah.
And actually we just did audio coaching. We didn't even use video. So when Zoom came along, it was no problem. But I think for new people coming in to the equation on training to be a coach, sometimes it can be a bit disconcerting thinking, I'm just looking at a screen. How am I going to train to be a great coach? But did you find it was okay? You sound like you did.
I did. I didn't find it a barrier at all. Mm. And it's helpful because with my own clients, it's such a mix. Sometimes we're on the phone, sometimes we're via Zoom, sometimes we're in person. And I feel like it really allowed me to build skills around how to meet my clients in the space that fits best for them. And I felt prepared to do all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Yeah, it's brilliant. It's like building the muscles, isn't it? Building the muscles in doing it virtually over screen to screen, or whether it's doing it just audio, going out for a walk in a park even, or whether you're doing it face-to-face, whether you meet clients face-to-face as well. And so much range and possibility in all three approaches, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just really moving into the last few questions, I feel like I could chat for hours. It's so interesting listening to what it is that you do. But I guess what I'm curious about is, how have the skills that you've developed through training to be a coach and through your practice of being a coach, how have they impacted not necessarily your working conversations and your working experiences? Because, you know, you spoke about those a little bit. I'm really curious about how the tools have impacted your personal conversations with friends and family, if you're okay to share that.
No, I'm happy to. It's interesting. I think if I was to boil it down, I'd say the two big differences I notice are that I am a much better listener, like really staying with the person and listening deeply. And I give a lot less advice.
Maybe you just
yeah, you just know to button it. And then, you know, that idea that we're seeing our friends as creative, resourceful, and whole, yeah, and not just our clients, that expectation that you know this problem better than I ever could, and I know you have the resources you need. Mm. How can I support you emotionally? How can I help you think through this? But I know you've got what it takes, and that's really different than all the ways we might intervene with our friends otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you know what you should do? I've got an idea, kind of thing.
Yeah, let me tell you.
I think that, you know, is like, I ask this question quite a lot because I'm really curious about it myself. And I know it impacted my friends and family as well when I trained to be a coach. And it's almost like some of them would say, are you coaching me? What are you doing there? What is that? You know? But then other people would suddenly go, actually, where did that come from? How am I sharing that? Why am I talking about that? What have you done to me? You know, but it's really just how to listen well and effectively. And I think that is always seems to be the biggest gift of coach training, particularly at coach training. It's how do we listen in a real safe container, and how do we give space for that person to be really able to unfold and feel confident and comfortable to be able to do that. And it's so lovely when that enriches our private relationships as well.
I agree. And I think that one of the things I noticed in the cohort that I was in is that so many of us came from what I'll call helping professions.
Yeah.
And we're used to having answers. And so it is really fantastic training to let that go and just be the supportive sort of framework for helping someone else get there. And it's just, it's wonderful to see. And I think it's more impactful.
Yeah. Because we don't know the sum total of who this person is in front of us and what they truly want or what they truly need. And so for us to actually give advice, obviously there's mentors and there's consultants that do that, but a coach is very different.
It's a different job. It's a different job.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a different job. Exactly. Like we switch hats, and sometimes I say that because I'm a mentor too. So I switch hats with clients and saying, okay, it sounds like we want to step into some mentoring here. And I think once we've trained with our clients and trained them to be aware of how much availability there is for them to be able to explore what's true for them, it just feels like, oh, a breath of fresh air. It's so liberating.
Yes. Yeah. And I find it less effort on my end, which is also nice.
Yeah, exactly. That was a tough one for me to be with at first, because I was like, surely I've said very little in this coaching session, and they said they got a lot from it, but I feel like, have I earned my money? What's going on here? So there's a lot of work to be done around actually get out of the way and let the coaching come through you. Yeah, that was something I was taught. And I think that's very true. Yeah.
I would agree.
Amazing. This has been a fantastic conversation. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh. Yeah. I feel the same.
How can people find you? How can they reach out to you should they wish to connect?
Very easily. You can go to my website, CamilleHendersonDavis.com, and book time.
Easy. Love it. Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. Really enjoyable conversation.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Phil. It's been wonderful.
If you'd like to train to be a professional coach, why don't you check out actleader.com? That's www.actleader.com. On our website, we have a ton of information that can really help you get clarity on the exact right course for you. We also have articles that go into detail about the different aspects of coaching, how to apply it, and why it's a wonderful thing. Look forward to seeing you soon.